It's a privilege to be able to share with you this morning. And I don't know about you, but as I sit there for the last few months, there's so much excitement happening, and that's before we even get to the message. And so I just hope that the message doesn't bring an end to this. I was thinking as we see so much from Greg and his team, to the presentation, the PowerPoints that come through, I was wondering of the many reasons that we come to church for, and I'd really like to know your favorite reason for coming to church. It's relevant to the message this morning, but what would be the top reason you come to church? What's the thing that attracts you the most? And there is so much on offer, as we see here, before we even get to the message. Who would like to give a reason, your favorite reason for coming to church? God. Okay, yep. That's pretty broad, that's pretty big, but yeah, that's fine. God is big enough. The worship time, meaning the singing? Yes, yep, definitely behind. Fellowship? Singing, fellowship. Yep. The teaching? Yep. That's all a big part of why we're here. I've got to tell you folks that I come from a church that had a lot to offer as well. And those were priorities for people, and they're wonderful. They're wonderful. But this is what happened in my church, the one I came from. We used to love some of the speakers, and there were a few speakers. We used to check the roster. Who's on Sunday? And if your favorite speaker was on, you came. But guess what happened if your favorite speaker was on leave? You didn't show up. And there are churches today that have reached such a proficient point in their worship, they record their singing session and they sell it on CDs. And I don't need to name any of those churches, we know. And they are so good. But imagine if an announcement was made. Next Sunday, our singing team is not going to be present. They've got leave. We won't have singing worship. I reckon half their population would stay home. Because what defines them as people of God is the time of singing, the time to worship using the band, using the sound. And that is wonderful as well. But that's what defines them. And without you realizing it, you get to a point where you pick your favorites and you come for your favorites. So I want to paint this picture for you this morning. I'm privileged to be a father. I won't do that here. I'm privileged to be a father, and I've got four children. And I'm trying to understand the concept of prayer and the concept of relationship between me and God. And this is our topic for today, prayer. We've been talking about prayer a fair bit. And I've got my daughter, and she comes up to me and I say, take a seat. And so I sit down and she sits on my lap. And I say, it's good to have you here. I'd really like to know why you're here today. And she says, oh, it's good for me, Dad. It's good for me to be here. Dad, I love the stories you're going to share with me today. I feel secure, Dad. And then I think to myself, what if I can't offer those things? What if I can't offer you security anymore? What if I can't give you the stories because you've heard them all? What's going to be left when it's all stripped away? What if I lose all my gifts and all I am to you is a father? It's going to come down to love. We are here, hopefully. And I say hopefully because I know that's the case. But maybe we don't think about it. Because love brings us here for God. And within love, you get the urge, not the wish, the urge to worship. You want to get up and pray. Greg says that it's this chorus that does it for him. And when Greg said, though, I sense a I wasn't just, oh, I want to sing. That's the bit where he just loves God through that chorus. I belong to you. And hopefully this is where we want to be when we come here. Love brings us here. Because if my daughter said to me, it's because of your stories, I would feel I have failed as a father. No, it's not because of my stories. It's because you love me and you're here for that. Something I do which helps me very often understand the concept is to think of the opposite. And I'm going to do this with you this morning. We want to think of prayer. What is prayer? And I have no wise, effective, great definitions for that. I'm not even going to go there. But I'd like you to think of order. Order. Parameters, guidelines, order. The way I want you to think of order is to put yourself in your mind for 5 minutes in the most chaotic environment you can imagine. Like anarchy, chaos. Stay there for 5 minutes. I'm thinking of what? A crash? Childcare centre? Where are things just totally out of control? Put yourself in that for 5 minutes, and when you've come out, you have a really good definition for order. If you want to think of what light is, you want to appreciate light, but you've got it all around you, so you really can't fathom it. Find yourself in a dark place, so dark where you do this and you can't see your hand. And stay in there for 1 minute until your eyes here go like this. Then come out. You have a good understanding of what light is, don't you? What isn't prayer? I want you to consider for a second. And then we'll get into what prayer really is, which I believe you all know. What isn't prayer? It's not a wishing list where you present your wishes to God. Lord, this is what I need today. This is what I want for tomorrow. And you've got them in priority too. And you sort of don't want to be asking for the same things because you think, oh, well, I asked for that yesterday. You know. So I'm going to give you something different today. It's not a list. It's not a shopping list. Even though our requests are asked from God. Present your request to God, it says. It's not a wishing list. Prayer. What else isn't prayer? It's not me telling God what I want and what I'm good at and what I think He should do for my life. That's not prayer. Even though we tell God a lot about that. So I'm trying to understand prayer through what isn't prayer, the way I see it. And this is where I want us to go as we'll put our first PowerPoint, which is the bunny up there. Prayer, the biggest isn't about prayer is you. Prayer is not you. It's not about you. It's not about me. Even though we think it is. Well, why else would I pray? Does God need anything? Prayer is not about us. It's never been about us. No part of worship, fellowship, teaching, or praying has ever been about you. I'm sorry to break it to you if that's what you thought. And I'm thinking of the generation Y, the Gen Y people today, the young ones, 1980 post. If you're Gen Y, you're about 20 years old and under today. You've had it so good. It's always been about you. You are the center of your existence. How do I know that? I work with these kids every day. I am unfortunately qualified to say that it's not about you. Just because you've got an iPod, just because you've got an iPhone, man, the world is so much bigger than you. And the generation before that, which is my group, we've had it pretty good too. But it's not about us. And so if we start thinking of prayer with that premise, it's not about me, we've made an awesome start. And so you don't have to deal with that. It's not about you. I really want to emphasize that. Because the teaching could be awesome, the tools could be great, the opportunities could be endless. If you walk in there thinking, you are the center, you know, you don't ever qualify. Don't pray. It's not about you. It's about Jesus. It's about Him. He is the star. He is the Prince. And even though we are, you know, we are the center of the salvation sort of plan, we are the reason He came, we are very special. It is about Him. Can I have a sentence? And when I think of Him, let's establish some big facts about what He is, because He is the center. God is love. He's not lovely. He's not loving, even though He is that. He is love. This is not a verb. Love is not a verb in this particular expression. It's a noun. You know, when you say, this is John, and there's nothing more to say, this is John. God is love. God is love. And when we think of God like that, that's a good start before we approach prayer. I've got a little story that I read about understanding love in the everyday stuff. And there's this lady that was driving a brand new car, 2 days out of the showroom. And her husband was generous enough to buy her that car. And so she has an accident on the second day. And this other man who actually says the story says, look, I realized very soon this was not about the car trouble. This was about her. She was not well. So there is this accident. She comes down and she's absolutely shaking. It was her fault. And I said, are you okay? She says, oh, no, really, I'm not. Look, we've got to exchange details. I'm insured. Oh, my husband's going to kill me. It's a 2-day-old car. Let me get my details from the glove box. Do you want me to help you? He says. I think I better help you. So he goes around and he assists her as she tries to find the details. The glove box drops open and there's a note on the service book says, by her husband. It says, honey, in case of an accident, remember, it is you I love, not the car. Gentlemen, food for thought on that one. It's so easy now to say when your BMW is sitting pretty out there, it's fine, I'll do the same. But, you know, it's just how it is. We tend to forget, under pressure, what love is about. Love is that part that releases you from the pain and the stress in the everyday and says, it doesn't matter how much you stuff up. It doesn't matter how bad you've done it. My feeling for you has not moved one bit. It's unconditional. There's nothing more you can do. There's nothing more you can do to earn my love. And there's nothing less you can ever do that I would lose love for you. It's constant. It's a constant. In the area of maths, constants are the easiest things to deal with. If you can imagine of an expression, mathematical expression, with a lot of unknowns or variables, as we call them, and we tend to put letters on them, X, Y, Z, they are a nightmare to deal with because they change every day. And they're never constant. And so the biggest problem is, what is X? Well, it's what you wanted to be today. Tomorrow will be something else. But 7 as a number, that is so good to deal with. 7 is always constant. God's love is like a 7. It's not going to change. It's always going to be there. And so, approaching prayer with the fact that it's not about me and God's love is constant, we are on the right track. The mindset is where it should be. Another thing that God is, can we have the next one, is that God is wisdom. And again, God is not just wise. He's not just wise. He is wisdom. That is His essence. But wisdom, gee, how much we admire wisdom. And earthly wisdom is truly impressive. But we tend to misunderstand it. I mean, I can speak of my own people, I suppose, thousands of years ago. The wisest man that lived, according to many, is Socrates. He was so wise, they had to put him away for good. They poisoned him and killed him because he was just too wise for their understanding. So earthly wisdom, as impressive as it is, I've got a couple of quotes here that impress me. Eagles don't flock. You have to find them one at a time. It's those things in life that are so good, but they don't come in stacks and groups. You have to look for them, and they're very rare. They're like the eagle. You're not going to see 10 eagles in the sky. Life is not about the breaths we take, but about the moments that take our breath away. And I've got this in a diary, in a journal that I use. It was gifted by a friend. And it catches me out every time I see it. It's like, oh, I forgot about that. That is wisdom that just gets into your heart and you think, wow, that is so good, that is so strong. In terms of our time, somebody said, I recommend that you take care of the minutes and the hours will look after themselves. That's just for us, the stress about tomorrow. And you think, God, that is good. And God gives us the earthly wisdom. But godly wisdom, I can't define it. I tried this morning to put a definition that represents how I feel about wisdom. And I'll do my best to share it with you. I came up with this. The wisdom for me is the point where my intelligence has maxed out and God's insight has just started. My intelligence has reached the top, and that's not very high. And God's insight has just taken over. God's wisdom is not present when we think we know it all. There's no room for that. It's like that still wind that came after the earthquake and after the storm. And Elijah just waited for it. And it was in the stillness that God was there. Wisdom is like that. We've got to have the time for it. And that's God's wisdom. So God is wisdom. I want you to think of this picture. God is a painter. He's got a brush. He's painting away. And he's so slow. And you're looking at him. And you're getting impatient. And you're thinking, come on. Come on, I can't see a thing here. And you're pretty good in painting. So God's painting away. A brush every 10 years. Paint. 10 years. And you've got this eternal perspective now. He's given you a bit of that. And you're trying to follow him. Saying, God. And he says, stop. This is you. I'm painting your life right now. Take time. Trust me. Oh, wow. So you get a bit of patience. Lord, when is the next brush going to take place? In about 10 years from now. Bang, another brush. And you're thinking, no. So you grab the brush. And God says, okay, take the brush. Paint. And you start making up for times lost. Bang, 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 bang. You start impressing yourself. That's pretty hard to do. When we impress ourselves, that's pretty good. And you start painting. And you're going away, and God's just stepped away. And he's letting you have a go. And it's quite amusing at first. And then you make the first mistake. And you look for white out, but you can't put white out on a canvas. So it's not happening. And then the second mistake. Because you're starting to panic. And this is your life. And you're painting away decision by decision, choice by choice. You've taken over the brush. The problem is the more mistakes we make, the more God just steps away and lets us have a go. So we get to a point where it's a mess and we're desperate. And you know, we look to God and we say, well, now what? God says, you want me to take over? Please, Lord, take over the brush. Here's the brush. It comes back again. And in a very slow, painful way, he starts to improve. And you're thinking, how is he going to fix that? How is he going to fix my habit of 10 years? How is he going to fix this relationship that I've absolutely wrecked? How is he going to do it? It's beyond repair. It takes time. God fixes things up. And you say, wow, that is good. That is good. And once he's put a bit of a good picture together, and you've recovered, guess what you do? Can I have the brush again? So you take the brush again and you paint away. And this is the story of our lives. But this is where God is love. God says, so long as you come back to me with the brush, I'll fix things up. It's only when you take the brush and you feel guilty to give it back to me. It's only when you think it's beyond repair. Because you've got to remember, I'm not lovely. I am love. The sun is not hot, folks. The sun is heat. There's a lot of things that are hot, but the sun is heat. It's just the source of heat. So you go back to God with that in mind. You approach prayer knowing, whatever I've done, there's nothing that He can't fix. And that is the biggest problem for those here that amongst us that spend time trying to evangelize people with a bad past. You know, just the scars are so deep. So you approach God and you say, Lord, you've never got it once wrong. Here's the brush. The third thing God is, amongst thousands of things, I've just chosen those three because they make sense to me for this message. God is sovereign. And I'm sure you can add so many to this. God is holy. But God is sovereign. This is the one I struggle with the most, though. That's why I've left it last. And I'm going to share some of these passages with you as soon as I comment on this. God is sovereign. We say yes to that. He's in control. What if things don't make sense? What if it doesn't suit me? What if that does not go well? He's in control then, and we say yes. Up here we say yes. How about down here then? What do you say about the girl that got raped walking back from youth group on her way to her place? True story. What do you say to this girl? Or her parents? God is sovereign. But do you believe it? And let me ask you a difficult question. If you were God, would you have stopped it? Oh, hang on. Well, if you believe He's sovereign, you wouldn't stop it because He knows best. But if I was Him, I wouldn't allow it. And thank God I'm not God. You see, He's sovereign. What if it hurts so much and you just want to take over? Take the brush and paint away. And you bring your own input into it. Where's the wisdom in that? In the rape of a young Christian girl on her way back home. Lord, you could have stopped it. Why not? Why not? One of the greatest books I've ever read. Hold on to your faith when God doesn't make sense. James Dobson. Boy, it took me a long time to read that book. Story after story after story. And I never got over it. Story after story of things that just should not have happened. Should not have happened. And so God has this amazing perspective of things, though. He's wise. He is sovereign. There's this story that I think will help you understand even more this concept of me knowing so much more than you. And that means God. It is by the book of James Dobson. He has a son named Ryan, and he takes him to the specialist, ear specialist, because there's this infection in his ear. And you know, earache. And it's not good. So he takes him to the doctor, and the doctor puts him down on a table and says to the father, James Dobson, he's 6'4", by the way, says to him, hold on to your son, I've got to get in and just remove something that's actually embedded into his ear. And the father just puts the hands up. The doctor goes to approach Ryan's ear, and as soon as he touches, Ryan just jumps up. And the father loses grip. And the doctor says, hold on, we've got to get it out. Goes to put his weight on. Again, the same thing happens. Bang, let's go. And the doctor says, if you don't hang on, I'm going to have to use anesthesia here and put the child to sleep. So hold on. You'd think a 6'4" man would be able to hold on to a kid. Third time he fails, and the doctor says, do you want me to call your wife? And so he understood he had to hold. He puts everything he had on this child and he's pressing Ryan down. The problem though was there was a mirror on the side of the room where they could cross their eyes. So here I am holding and I'm looking there and Ryan is looking there as well. And they made eye contact during the invasion. And Ryan's look said it all. Dad, why are you doing this to me? Why are you causing me pain? And the father, there was nothing the father could have done to explain that. So the father cried. And the doctor was done. Relief obviously came. That is, I believe, God's perspective. You are doing it tough. And there's nothing I can do to explain it. But it's for your own good. And that's very difficult to say to somebody who's hurting as well. So God is love. God is wisdom. God is sovereign. I'm going to read something from Proverbs 2. Just follow me as I read it. It says that, my son, if you accept my words and store my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight, that's the wisdom I'm thinking about, and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord. That is prayer. That is prayer for me. Then you will know what is right and what is wrong, and what is fair. For wisdom will enter your heart. That for me is prayer. Where's my wishing list now? It seems irrelevant. You don't want to even bring it up. It's not that you haven't got wishes. When you think of prayer like that, what are you going to ask that's bigger than that? God is sovereign. And I read from Chronicles. Praise be to you, O Lord. This is David's last prayer, recorded in the Bible as his last words as well. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor, for everything in heaven and earth is yours. David, you have been the best king we've ever seen. And you can say that after all you've managed to do, after all the wealth, you can say that. If David can say it, it must be true. Yours, O Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all. Wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things. In your hands are strength and power to exalt and give strength to all. Now, my God, I give you strength. I give you thanks and praise your glorious name. That is what it means to say God is sovereign. You are so much above me. I could be the greatest king in terms of earthly understanding, and yet you are so much above me. That was David's legacy to his son Solomon. Solomon comes in the next chapter. No wonder Solomon got it right to start with. When the father left him that sort of understanding, we wonder about his wisdom. David had a lot to do with it. And then Solomon asked for that amazing reality. Give me the wisdom to know your people. Don't worry about wealth, Lord. Don't worry about anything. Just give me the wisdom to deal with your people. And so we look at prayer, hopefully, like this. It's not about me. God is love. God is wise. His wisdom. And God is sovereign. So, how does this change things about us? Can I have the next one, please? If God is love, and he's all that, what do we do? And let me ask you this. We've been dealing with prayer for the last few weeks here at Edge. How's that going for you? You praying more? You praying better? What do we do? What do we do to actually make prayer become part of who we are? Can I have the next one? Thanks. This is the before part. This is a prayer that sounds very good. God, help me become holy. Help me serve you in your church, in my church. Help me overcome sin. Help me spread your gospel. There's nothing wrong with his prayer. But this is a prayer that I have engaged for years. And I think there's one far better than this. Can I have the next one? Which will only come with the insight of God. I'll let you read it. There's a profound difference between the two for me. God, what is your plan for my life? Yes, I want to be holy. I want to serve in my church. Oh, don't tell me what you want to do. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. What is your plan for me, Lord? And maybe it's not to be here. Or maybe it's to be here for a year. Who knows? What is your plan? You see, I'm starting with Him at the steering now, not me telling Him what I want to do. Even though what I want to do is good. I want to be part of your plan to redeem the world. That's just as simple as that. But it's very difficult to apply. And I'm not going to act smart here by saying, yep, I've done it. Works great for me. That surrender is very difficult. And the problem with me, I suppose, and I'll put myself into this, that I approach God sometimes thinking I know what I want to do. Lord, I even know the word love in Greek. I know about it, Lord. Somebody says agape. Love is not a fish. Agape is a fish. So we've got to get this straight now. It's not agape. Not agape. Okay, here we go. Agape. That's something that doesn't come easy for us English-speaking people. Agape. Can you try that? Agape. Well done. Agape. Not agape. So God, I even know the meaning of love. But God said, I'm really not interested in what you know. It's not about you. It's not about you. It comes back to that. And again, I'll come back and I'll wrap my thoughts with this prayer. It's about this communication between the father and the child. You don't need parameters for prayer to make your prayer life successful. 101 steps. We'll make a book of that. You don't need the guidelines. You don't need the do's and don'ts. They might help you, but you don't need them. Does a daughter need a list of things to do in order for her to love her father? Gee, that would be an awful relationship. Well, then why is it okay for us to turn to Google prayer? Why is it okay for us to look for those steps that are going to make us right? And I will ask you this, and this is not an easy one. Don't answer, by the way. Would you do anything it takes to make your life a life of prayer? Would you do anything it takes to make your life a life of prayer? So now we start to think, how much is this going to hurt? But I think that's the problem. It's not the steps we need. It's all in here. And so the daughter loves her father because there's this communication. We need to walk with God. Did God need Adam and Eve to pray to Him before sin entered? What did God do before sin entered the life of Adam and Eve? The Bible says He walked with them. He walked with them. They didn't need to pray. He walked with them. That was their communication. Sin comes and we have this separation. So now we've got to pray. But God says, you come to me. You come to me. And I will walk with you again. In a way that's different. But I will walk with you again. So no list is necessary. No boxes. We don't need to put prayer in a box of definition. As much as we love to do that, it helps us along. It's about walking with God. The father wants to be close to his daughter. The daughter wants to be close with the father. Every day. And that closeness, the everyday contact, is prayer. I've had some of my greatest prayers at traffic lights. When the traffic just never ending. I used to be on the road for many, many years, driving professionally. And I had some of my greatest prayer moments during traffic times. No, you can't pray during traffic. You can't concentrate. You can't pray in the shower. That's wrong. Don't pray lying down. That's bad. You got to, you know, on your knees. You can't pray when the music is in the background. That's just offensive to God. Man, who put you? Who told you? Who gave you that insight of what I can and what I can't do? I'm telling you, I had my greatest moments of prayer during the busy, busy times of traffic. You see, we're trying to define what works. And I'm telling you, it's not going to be in those 101 steps. Pray when things are loud. But it's not about the time I take away only. It's about the time I talk to God. Do you want to speak to God? You want to tell Him something? That's your prayer time. And it's good to take time off and pray. It's good to go away. Jesus did it. But if that's all you consider to be prayer, man, you're not going to be praying enough. Not today. Not today the way life is. Take the time to talk with God every step of the way, and you are praying. I want to finish with this verse. Philippians says that, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything with prayer and petition and thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, and I like that part, it's not for us to fathom, all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. That is the best I could come up with for prayer this morning. Present your request to God in everything. Don't wait for that magic time. And I'm passionately seeking that we make more time in this church to pray. I'm not against it. But that's not what's going to do it. And prayer is not a list of successful steps. It's the desire to walk with God. If you are walking with God, making him part of your soul, not just a guest of your life, well, you are praying. Thank you.